Good evening and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. As we hope you know by now, our weekly conversations include you. And if you'd like to join us anytime during the program, our phone lines are open. The number is 941-3689 if you call us from Oahu. And from the neighbor islands, 877-941-3689. Many of us talk about food policy and food security. In part, those conversations are driven by politics. But for Hawaii farmers, large and small, are they in the conversation enough, and do we hear enough from them? Tonight on Town Square, we'll get farmers' views on what's happening in our state, and at the session in the legislature, our panel will consider the ag bill still in play and continuing to grow attention and what they could mean in practice for those on the front line of food production. Hawaii farmers. Joining us by phone is Simon Russell. He runs Hilu Hilu Farms in Haiku, Maui, growing bananas and papayas, vegetables, and ducks. He's the vice president and legislative chairman of the Hawaii Farmers Union United and wants to move Hawaii's agriculture in the direction of regenerative farming practices for self-sufficiency and food sovereignty. In our studio is Chris Manfredi. He is the president of Hawaii Farm Bureau, the organization representing nearly 2,000 member families. It supports all forms of agriculture and is the largest agriculture advocacy organization in the state. He has previously served as Kau County Chapter President, HFB's Vice President, and has chaired the Government Affairs Committee for three terms. He's best known for kickstarting the Kau coffee industry, and he organizes that district's annual coffee festival and serves as a national delegate to American Farm Bureau of nearly 6 million members nationwide. Also with us in studio is Ken Koike. He is the farm project coordinator for Ono and Pono Farms. He was one of five people from Hawaii able to visit and study Cuba's organic agriculture in the summer of 2010. He currently oversees two organic farm operations in Waianae Valley, one in the agricultural park on 9.5 acres, where they're raising fish and kalo in an aquaponic system, along with canoe foods, and the other is a 1-acre farm with livestock of chickens, pigs, ducks, rabbits, and goats. And of course, you're here too, and if you'd like to join the conversation, we'd love to have you. Again, our number is 941-3689 from Oahu, and from the neighbor islands, 877-941-3689. Welcome to all of you.
Aloha.
Thank you for being here. I want to start, before we start looking at specifically what has been moving through the ledge, and just talk a little bit about the farming community. Very often from the outside, we talk about it as if it's, you know, one community, farmers. And of course, you all know that there are different factions, different ways of doing what you've been doing, farming. And also sometimes there have been chasms between and bridges made in different factions. So I'd like to go right round our table, which includes you too, Simon, and just get your take on how you view farming and farmers in Hawaii right now. Simon, you want to go first?
Yes, thank you, Beth Ann. What a pleasure to be with you guys. I sure wish I could be in the studio, but I'm in the middle of my spring planting here in Maui. I've got a greenhouse full of starts, so flying over there wasn't really an option.
Well, we're glad that we've got you by phone. So,
are you hearing me okay?
We are. Thank you.
Okay. Well, wonderful. Farmers rarely have time to go to meetings or sit in on legislative policy discussions. So, it's really been my pleasure in the Farmers Union to do that for my fellow regenerative agriculturalists, as we like to term it in the Farmers Union. We orient most of our policy towards people who are going in the direction of soil health. And so that usually includes organic farmers. And then we have an exciting new method of farming called Korean natural farming. And I know Ken over there is very familiar with it. And I can, by the way, and to you, President Manfredi, it's a real pleasure to be here. So I'm just really excited to talk about agriculture policy. I always am. There are some wonderful bills in the legislature this year, and a lot of people want to help farmers, but most people don't know how. And I would say the most important thing, if a policymaker was going to try to help farmers, would be to help them afford to be a farmer in Hawaii, because our profit margins are slim. The elements are stacked against us. We had 70-mile-an-hour wind storms twice already this year, which wrecked a bunch of my orchards. We get hurricanes, lava flows, you name it. All kinds of things happen out here in the environment that make farming a difficult practice, but we love it. And so that's why we go to the ledge as Farmers Union. We ask for support.
Thanks very much, Simon. Ken, why don't you go next?
Well, just contemplating the question that you brought, the biggest problem of why you're not hearing from the farming community is because so many of us who want to farm have just the basic problem of obtaining land to farm on. And having searched for over 3 years before I was granted the privilege of going to Waianae, now we get to run into the challenges of rainfall and having a Department of Agriculture who unfortunately wants to find reasons to kick me off the property rather than help us become effective farmers. I didn't realize all of these things until I actually tried to do it myself. Came in with a lot of preconceived ideas. And so the legislation that we're supporting now are just trying to bridge that humongous gap. If we want a new generation of young people graduating from our high schools to come into our community as experienced, educated farmers, then obviously the education that the DOE is offering needs to change, especially for a rural community like mine in Waianae. We no longer have things like the 4-H or Future Farmers of America and such that we used to have, you know. And I'm pretty sure on the Big Island, they still do, hopefully. But being able to avoid having to go to college and get a 4-year degree in order to obtain the right to apply for a state lease or for DLNR or for even the Department of Hawaiian Homelands requires a 4-year degree in agriculture or to have, 3 years full-time experience and tax returns to prove that. Those hurdles right now are way too high for my community to qualify for any of these leases. And so we're looking for, you know, other avenues. For example, the nonprofits in our community that can qualify are now working in cooperation with the people that actually want to be boots on ground. And so we're trying our best to work within the parameters we have and, again, support the necessary legislation so that right now in my farm, we're not supposed to actually be living on the property. So, you know, theft and so forth is extremely rampant. We're targets. It's just really small and practical things like this. How can we increase the amount of people farming on the, you know, tens of acres when we can't house them and stuff like this? Yeah, it's really basic stuff.
All right, we'll get back to that point in a second. Chris Manfredi.
You know, it's an honor to be here today with you, Beth, Simon, and Ken. I really appreciate the invitation. And I want to echo some of the thoughts of my fellow panelists. You know, farmers are constantly faced with challenges surrounding weather, climate, drought, weeds, pests, disease, issues surrounding land, labor, markets, transportation, and ever-growing regulations. We have to deal with all these things at the same time that we're trying to grow the next generation of farmers and ranchers. And speaking to the educational portion of that, that would potentially attract young people into careers in agriculture, we're working on a Ag Workforce Development Pipeline Initiative at the Capitol. That bill is HB 853. And what that would do is be strengthen the Department of Labor and Industrial Relations to put some accountable staff and some funding behind growing the next generation of farmers and ranchers in the Department of Education. And using technology to attract young people to careers in agriculture, things like GPS, navigation, robotics, engineering as well as the more conventional math and sciences, are things that can increase efficiencies, help farmers and ranchers in Hawaii be more competitive, to be able to compete with our counterparts on the mainland. You know, at the end of the day, if the crops on the shelf aren't priced at a point where they can compete with mainland imports and those from South Central America, you know, you're going to see farmers continue to struggle. The margins are thin, and when you take all these challenges and lump it together with a thin profit margin, it's become increasingly difficult to attract young people to careers in agriculture, and that's something that the Farm Bureau holds near and dear.
You've all talked about the issue of education, and you know, Simon, you said that people want to be able to help farmers, but in many cases they just don't know enough to be able to do that constructively. And we also heard from Yuken saying that, you know, there's more of a focus on farming now, but it seems to be less of an ability to be able to meet the demand of it, and that it's difficult because there are so many challenges. And certainly you said the same thing too, Chris. But when you talk about the farming community, those are sort of all the issues that, you know, we see from the outside. But as you look from the inside outward at everyone else and with each other, do you feel like you're all speaking with a similar voice, or is there an issue between farmers that we don't understand well enough?
Well, I think our time is best spent focusing on issues upon which we can all agree. There's so many challenges surrounding the basics of agriculture. As I said, land, water, labor, markets, transportation, growing the next generation. I mean, if we could all have a meaningful conversation and focus on the things, our energies, which are substantial when you talk about the various nonprofits and folks that really want to see Hawaii become food secure to some degree, we can really have a much greater impact if we focus on those types of issues.
Do you feel, any of you, that there has been too much pressure from the outside to see divisiveness in the farming community, Simon?
I can certainly answer to that. I live in Maui, and we had a major electoral campaign on behalf of the biotech industry and some individuals in the community who were trying to put some regulations on the biotech industry. And I think it was the most expensive campaign in U.S. history, if I'm not mistaken. It cost some $400 a vote. And I believe Mr. Manfredi's organization sided with the biotech industry. We tried to stay out of that fray, and I don't like divisiveness, but there is a big hurt that was put on the Maui farming community because of that rift, I would call it. Speaking to land, water, labor, markets, and transportation, and where we can come together, I think Farm Bureau and Farmers Union can definitely collaborate on some of those issues, but and I look forward to it. But we definitely have legislation at the county level and at the state level looking at markets, looking at lowering the cost of labor, looking at getting access to water and getting farmers on the land. The transportation part I haven't looked at too closely, except for inter-island transportation and mainland markets transporting our goods out of state, and specifically truth and labeling, which is what we're really interested in, that the goods that do get transported from Hawaii, that brand Hawaii is protected to the max.
All right. And I'll let you answer that question too, Ken, because you have sort of the small organic farm perspective. As you hear all these other discussions happening, is this an issue for you as you see everyone else talking about farming as if you're all speaking with one voice?
I really want to focus on the things that actually we share in common, because when you look at the total amount of farmers, it's ridiculously small. And when you look at the average age, and it's been repeated so many times, that it's in the 60s. So it's obvious that the people who came before us obviously did not recognize this tragedy was on its way here. And unfortunately, the Farm Bureau needs to take that responsibility. Why, when younger folks want to farm now and running into these roadblocks like, why do I need a four-year degree in agriculture to qualify for a state ag lease? And how many people can qualify that have, you know? Isn't it supposed to be that if we're going to want more farmers to come into the community, that we make it much more viable for them to do so? If I'm going to graduate from university and spend that kind of money and go into that kind of debt, would we really want to farm? Seriously? You see, back when we had lots of farms and you could apprentice at a farm that you really loved because it was part of your community. See, again, it's different on the Big Island. On Oahu, we have become so gentrified. Our entire dairy industry in Waianae was NAFTA'd out. It was consolidated into one, and then it was pulled.
So your point is that we've lost the mechanism for being able to
where can we
mentor
apprentice?
And apprentice. And yet there are issues of public safety and making sure that what winds up on shelves is safe for consumption. How do you strike a balance between those two things, Ken?
Well, see, that's where we're pursuing these types of... I was so happy that OHA came out with certain pieces of legislation like HB 20... What is, I can't even see it under this light, 205, I believe. And they have a companion, SB 434, that takes those things into consideration, takes into consideration like our community in Waianae is agriculturally based. We are the country. So can't we make it once they graduate from high school that they've been prepped to be able to qualify for these leases? And the answer was always yes. Many generations ago, no one had to go to college in order to qualify for a lease.
So how do you answer that, Chris? And then, Simon, you can jump in here, too. When you hear, as we all hear, farmers are aging. We don't bring enough young farmers in. We make it too tough for kids to be able to apprentice or be involved with mentorship programs and all the hurdles they have to jump through to be able to be a farmer.
Well, the simple answer and the easy answer and the best answer and the only answer is I agree with everything that Ken said, except that...
That was easy.
Yeah, it was, except that he seems to allude to the idea that the Farm Bureau awards those leases.
No.
He said the Farm Bureau has to take responsibility for that. So,
well, I wish the Farm Bureau was more proactive in lowering those hurdles so that younger generations before could have been qualified. Because, again, if you're going to graduate from university, right, with a four-year degree, even
And not everybody can afford that, so.
No, we agree completely on lowering the bar for beginning farmers. We're continually lobbying for those kinds of things to get people on the land, to make land more available.
Yes.
To reduce those hurdles.
Because our land is finite. It's not as if we can simply shift to someplace else, and then we have issues of housing and all that that are laid on top of it, which make it even more difficult to be able to say, where are we going to farm, how are we going to farm, and how much can we reasonably expect that we're going to be able to feed ourselves?
Right. Well, you're correct that the land is finite, and what is dwindling is the population of farmers. Mm-hmm. You know, historically... people were tied to the farm at a necessity. It was a matter of survival. And our society has evolved to a point where you have 2% of the population growing the food for the other 98%. We've herded people into urban centers, and we're asking farmers to do more with less. And that speaks to the efficiencies. And the more efficient farming becomes, the more broad those profit margins will become and incentivize young people to go into farming. And as a society and as an organization, we have to do all that we can to give young people or beginning farmers, not necessarily young people always. We see a lot of middle-aged people and retirees going into farming, and we also support that to a large degree. But we have to give them all the tools that they need to be successful.
All right. If you're just joining us tonight on Town Square, we're talking about farming with farmers. Ever want to talk to a farmer? We've got three of them with us right now. Our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. By phone, we have with us Simon Russell. He's the Vice President and Legislative Chairman of the Hawaii Farmers Union United. In studio with me is Chris Manfredi, the President of Hawaii Farm Bureau, and Ken Koike, the Farm Project Coordinator for Ono Pono Farms out in Waianae. If you want to join the conversation, the phone lines are open, 941-3689 if you're on Oahu, call that number. And if you're calling us from the neighbor islands, 877-941-3689. And I understand that we have Vincent Mana on the line. He's the president of the Hawaii Farm Union United. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Bethann. Aloha. Aloha. Aloha, Chris, Ben, Simon.
Aloha, you guys.
Aloha.
Aloha.
I had the, you know, it's great that you're holding this conversation, Bethann. Appreciate it. As with Simon, I couldn't physically be over there today, but I did want to, you know, just jump in to offer this perspective. You know, one of the things you talk about viewing, how do we view the farming industry from inside looking out and vice versa. You know, realistically, we're dealing with a agricultural support system in the government that's 0.4% of the budget.
Yes.
Paradise on earth, and yet agriculture gets 0.4, less than one half of 1% of the budget. And so it's basically, we're going to a legislature that says, you know what, guys, we really don't feel confident that you can grow our food here in Hawaii, mm-hmm. so we're not going to put the money toward that. We're going to bring it in from somewhere else. And as far as the average age of a farmer, I resemble that remark. I'm 61. I make my living at farming.
Sorry,
sorry about that, Vincent. But you do. But
we
you are typified by that statistic. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
You look.
And you know, it's a situation where my son, thankfully, is working on the farm. The intrinsic value of what that represents, as far as having a family farm, every dollar that's produced agriculturally. Reproduces $4 out in the economy. If we had a government that truly supported agriculture, was about growing our food locally, to level the playing field between being a service-based economy into a production-based economy, just level the playing field. We're not saying make it completely production-based, but, you know, level the playing field and have a situation to where when people are coming here, the tourists are coming here, they want to see paradise on earth. Mm. I have tourists come by our farm that are blown away at what we're doing on such a small area and doing it in a way that's regenerating, recycling our nutrients back onto the farm and into our food. And, you know, it's just a wonderful thing. And as far as our young farmers go, they have the same passion that I did when I was 40. When I was 40, I let go of a decorative painting trade. And I was going to farm, never farmed in my life. But I came back from a leadership seminar that said, you know what, I can't live this lie anymore. I really want to be working the land. And so I had that passion. I didn't have the wherewithal, though. Didn't have land, didn't have equipment. And I was fortunate enough to be able to stand on the shoulders of some very influential people in my life that were that I got the education. And I was able to enact that passion into where we are today as a family farm.
And you seem to be making the point that Chris Manfredi was making a while ago, that it's not just young farmers and kids that we're talking about, but people who simply want to be farmers. You did it
exactly.
At 40. Anybody else could try to do it if they really wanted to, if it were conducive to being able to do it. And that's the point that you all keep coming back to, is that there really isn't enough attention for all the conversation really being paid to being able to create a healthy agricultural environment to be able to grow new farmers. I mean, and this goes more than just going to the folks at the legend saying, hey, you like to eat? I mean, there has to be more than just that to it. And obviously, maybe that case hasn't been made well enough. Vincent, thanks so much for calling us.
Thank you, Bethann. Aloha.
Aloha. If you'd like to join us tonight and talk to a farmer, we talk a lot about food security and food policy issues, watching what's happening at the ledge. We're going to talk about a lot of the bills still alive. But before we do that, if there is something that you want to know from a farmer as you watched all this happen from outside or perhaps even inside the farming community, you can call us at 941-3689 if you're on Oahu, or 877-941-3689. All right, so let's start talking a little bit about what you see happening. Vincent's point is that not enough is really flowing to farmers. And you've all said how difficult it is and how many challenges there are. What's happening this year that would be a step in the right direction? Ken?
Wow. Yeah.
You want to think about that for
a
second?
No, no. When I consider our community out in Waianae, the reason why I'm in Waianae is because it is the largest Hawaiian community in the world. It's the concentration of Hawaiian people in the world. So I'm thinking if there's any place on Oahu, at least, that will understand what it is to be pono and to have aloha, especially for the Aina, it should be in Waianae. And having gone there, I understand that this is the closest place to being on an outer island, where the overarching pursuit isn't for monetary gain. In our community, there, as Chris was mentioning, there is a sense of sustainability, of a sense of you want to grow your food for your family. And that was the tradition for generations. People's backyards were abundant and they shared their food freely. That is no longer the case. And as we become more gentrified, our food insecurity just grows. And that the Honolulu City Council or that the Department of Agriculture or any other department for that matter does not take this seriously, that we are in jeopardy.
Do you think that they don't take that seriously, Chris? Well, the state and city and county
governments? You know, I think they do. It's a question of priorities. It's true that the Department of Agriculture gets less than 0.5% of the state budget. But there's other agencies that we also work with. One is law enforcement. We're working on a bill, HB 823, which speaks to crimes against agriculture. It talks about ag theft, trespass, counterfeiting.
Which is a big concern for Ken, as he mentioned earlier.
Yeah, and what it does is it's a pilot project that we're looking at on the Big Island, working with the prosecutors there, to put a dedicated investigative officer within the prosecutor's office to deal specifically on crimes against agriculture. Because when you talk about law enforcement priorities, it's typically focused on public health and safety. So even though farmers and ranchers pay their taxes, they don't always get the same priorities for law enforcement. So we'd like to see how that works because it's a huge problem. I mean, you can invest everything you have in a crop and have someone harvest it for you before you get the chance. So that's a huge problem. Another one that we're working on is with UH, and this also speaks to education, and that's strengthening the core of cooperative extension agents. We've got a bill, HB 850, that would put two new extension agents in every county. And, you know, those guys are the real boots on the ground.
Yes.
In terms of education, dealing with invasive species. Those educators within the university, CTAR, are really indispensable.
Yes.
They're vital to agriculture.
Those are the real experts.
And both the Department of Ag and mm-hmm. UH got cut pretty hard in 08 and 09.
Simon, jump in here.
Well, for us and for myself, the bottom line is to live off of the farm. We need to live on the farm. And so what Ken was talking about earlier about farmers getting on the land is critical. You know, that's probably, besides growing a new generation of farmers, it's the most important thing. Myself, I come from a family of farmers here in Hawaii, and we had Hurricane Iniki. I'm from Kauai, and our insurance company went bankrupt, and our farm was wiped out. And I'm not trying to get sympathy points here, but I'm just stating a fact that we basically, my mother sold our farm, you know, to pay the mortgage because she was so in debt after the hurricane. She didn't enjoy that indebtedness, so she sold our farm, and now I'm basically a farm operator. I operate three farms. I'm raising two children, and as a family farmer, it's really difficult to make a living here in Hawaii. And as President Manfredi mentioned earlier, to compete with the price of imports, those low prices of commodity crops that are coming in, and as well as just the basic food stuff, tomatoes. I was seeing tomatoes for $6 a pound from Mexico the other day at the grocery store. And it's just an amazing opportunity to make money growing food here. But frankly, I spend $36,000 a year just on rent and my food, you know, and then there's all the other bills. So for a farmer to make a living farming, I would say that they need to live on their farm and they need not to be in debt. And then they also need affordable labor costs and affordable inputs. And so we have several pieces of legislation in there this session. Some of them are still alive. Others aren't. SB 380 was not given a hearing, but it went a long way to grow a new generation of farmers. And we strongly believe in mentoring, and that's going to help us get the next generation kicking, because the farm mentoring is particularly important because the older farmers, as they retire and pass away, their knowledge goes with them. So we need to cultivate those knowledge sets. And they're very site-specific, in my opinion, where the farmer in Hanalei has a way different knowledge set than the farmer in Kula on Maui. And so those old-timers, you know, are kapuna. They need to be teaching and passing on that that knowledge set. And we have a farm mentorship program here in Maui that we hope to move statewide in the long run. We're very excited about that one.
But Simon, when you talk about some of the bills that didn't get a hearing or that you know died an early death, as we saw with the hemp bill, you never know what may happen. And certainly as we come to the end of session, having gotten replaced and a lot of changes happening, you know, at this point, some of that potentially, do you think, could come back?
Absolutely. Yeah. We look forward to that happening. And it's all about educating our leadership. We love our legislators, and I haven't really met any that I don't like personally. It's just about information and getting it to them. And most farmers don't have time to share information. They get up at dawn and they work till dark, and next day it's repeat. And if you get one day off a week, it's, you know, you're doing pretty good.
Well, we're glad that we have all of you with us tonight. And for those of you just joining us, we're talking about farming in Hawaii with farmers. Ever want to talk to a farmer? Got three of them with us tonight. Our number is 941-3689. If you call us from Oahu, use that number. And from the neighbor islands, 877-941-3689. Going to Glenn, calling us from Poipu. Aloha, Glenn. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you for taking my call. I don't really want to disrupt the conversation or upset it, but I would like to know, how can we address any of these issues at all if we don't address the chemtrail issue?
Ooh, good question.
All right, let's see who
and
wants.
I'll take your answer off the air, and thank you, NPR, for being NPR, and for the Waianae farmers, aloha and blessings to you.
Thanks very much, even though we're HPR, but that's okay. Thank you so much. We appreciate your kind thought. All right, so he's bringing up the point, how do we talk about farming if we don't talk about the, you know, the big old elephant in the room with chemical companies?
With geoengineering of the environment as far as the chemtrails?
Those,
you talk about cloud seeding.
Right, cloud seeding and so forth. Yeah, I mean, the intentional creation of droughts or floods.
That's classified, Ken.
Yeah, makes it much more difficult. Believe it or not, though, we have a bill, the Tarawelands bill of SB 774, that we're hoping that whenever it does rain, we will be able to trap as much of that rain in the natural constructed wetlands that the ancient Hawaiians had given to us. We have over 300 acres of it just in the Waianae Valley alone. We recognize we have to be much more concentrated on the production of water. Not just the conservation or the preservation of the use and things like this. The ancient Hawaiians taught us how to produce water for our aquifers. And so there are so many things like these that the state could allow us to restore and make it a higher priority so that, yes, all farmers in Waianae Valley would have more water, just like they do in Waimea on the Big Island. They could get out of the way as far as allowing us to sell food to our schools, yeah, and pass this particular bill, the farm to school bill. You got the number, Chris?
I do. It's 376.
376.
SB 376.
Right? And open up that entire market. You know how much food they buy? And the higher nutritional quality, because it doesn't have to come from a can anymore. It'll be fresh. And it'll boost, again, the ability for the local farmers wherever those schools are.
All right, yeah. I want to get Chris into this too. The conversation, how do you have it when you see some divisiveness over what's happening with chemtrails? What do you do about that?
Well, our members are more concerned about issues surrounding biosecurity. You know, that's a key one. I don't have too many members approaching me about chemtrails. But biosecurity is a huge issue. And, you know, it speaks to the cuts that the Department of Ag has experienced, introduction of coffee berry borer, which nearly devastated the coffee industry, working with federal, state, and local officials. We've been able to stem the tide of that and get that under control. Now we have another one that's threatening the macadamia industry called macadamia felted coccid. This little bug has the potential of completely wiping out an entire industry. Mm. We have some of the largest macadamia nut orchards in the world on the southern tip of the Big Island. Mm-hmm. So biosecurity is really top of mind for a lot of farmers. And it really takes a holistic approach working with the airlines, the shipping companies, the Department of Agriculture, shippers, regulators, importers, the whole gamut. It's full court press to try and minimize the introduction and the spread of invasive species, weeds, pests, disease. Coffee rust is a huge problem. Almost wiped out the industry in Brazil. Mm. If that were to come to Hawaii, you could see one of our signature crops evaporate. So we think our efforts are better spent, dealing with some of those everyday issues that we hear from farmers virtually every day.
In a similar way to what happened with papaya once upon a time.
Yeah.
True enough.
All right. We're going to take a few more callers. If you'd like to join us, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Jacob calling us from Kaimuki. Aloha, Jacob. Welcome to Town Square.
Hey there. How you doing? I'm a member of I'm taking the Go Farm Hawaii class, which is part of the College of Tropical Agricultural and Human Resources.
Good for you.
And I'm still like in the very exciting time where we're all, getting ready to go into the business part of the school, and I'm kind of like in my later 30s, so
awesome.
We're still psyched right now, so we haven't the economic realities haven't really hit us yet, but yeah, one thing I want to say is that before somebody was mentioned something about efficiency, and I think part of the problem of our culture is we're too focused on it.
Mm. Jacob, we're losing you, so make sure you speak right into the mouthpiece.
Okay, sorry. I think probably the problem like with our culture is that we're dealing with efficiency. That's like a big focus. And what we really need is resilience.
Yes.
Yes. And one of the issues with that is, recently we had the shipping strike. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it's like all the stores ran out of vegetables,
right.
Like Costco, it wasn't showing up on the shelves and, mm-hmm. The stuff that we were getting was like, flown in on like airplanes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's just like, no, man, if you really want to make a plan, that's going to support the people, bring in jobs, address housing, things like that. You have to make, choices that aren't necessarily efficient, but are going to help everybody in the long run.
All right, Jacob, forgive me for interrupting you, but your line is going in and out. I think we've got your point, but thanks very much for the call. He's just certainly giving credence to what you said earlier, all three of you. And we wish you all the best in your endeavors as you try to become the latest in the line of farmers. But pointing to the whole point of not knowing, I heard him say something that the economic realities haven't really sunk in yet. At what point do those economic realities really need to sink in before somebody invests a whole lot of money? I mean, there's certainly due diligence that someone should be doing. What do you advise as you're talking to people who may decide that, farming sounds great. I'd like to add to the food security. We'd like to do something that's good for the islands. I think I'll become a farmer. What do you tell them?
I'm not sure we can fit all that into an hour show.
Give it a good try, Chris.
But to the previous caller, I fully agree that resiliency is top of mind and something we should all strive for. But resiliency and efficiency are not mutually exclusive. The efficiencies are critical to a margin that, speaking to what Simon says.
So it's still pretty small either way you go, right? The margin is not
well,
a very
well, he was talking about struggling with paying rent and paying his bills. So, you know, we're kind of at a tipping point where the margins are so thin that if anything upsets that apple cart, you could see growers fail. And we've seen it. We saw it with Barry Boer. We saw a lot of Kona guys, small Kona guys,
give up.
So, you know, the best stimulus package for agriculture is a competitive price. So we need to be able to compete on the store shelves. But in Hawaii, because the labor is so expensive and the land is so expensive and the cost of inputs are so expensive, we can do all we can to try and produce everything that we can here. But in many cases, we have to do value added. We have to have niche market products, you know, high-end gourmet type products like Kona coffee, grass-fed beef, things that are going to command a higher price. And a lot of it is behind the marketing of Hawaii.
Which kind of goes back to the issue of branding and the purity of branding, so that people know exactly what they're going to get. Right. And it hasn't been perhaps, I don't want to say polluted by being mixed too much. But it also goes to the point of the idea that we've been told for a long time of buying local and going to your farmer's market or asking for local produce if you go to a big box retailer, a Costco, a Sam's Club, whatever. And then you'd say, well, we have to do all these other things. It sounds like, in a way, the buy local campaign hasn't really taken enough, forgive me, root.
So true.
Well, it's a work in progress. Is it finished? Absolutely not.
But this has been going on for years, yeah. Chris. What else do you think we need to do to get the point across of that you've been trying to make of, look, we deal with small margins. It's going to be more expensive. No, it's not going to be what you're going to pay for is if it's all flown in from Mexico. Okay. How do you make that point closely and get people to want to shell out of their pockets when they're so concerned about every dollar?
You know, one of the things that we could really do to help alleviate that is to have a local feed industry.
So you're not having to bring in feed from...
Right, grow our own feed here. That's one of our bills as well.
Where the hemp was also recently inserted.
Yeah, and we support industrial hemp.
Beth.
Ken, go ahead, pick it up.
This entire conversation is what I grew up with, and therefore most of what our listening audience thinks of agriculture is exactly what Chris explained, okay? But everything inside of me is screaming out to say, no, that's not it all, okay? One part of agriculture is an industry, okay, that we have to, again, the high-end coffee, the macadamia nuts, and so forth. These are proud products of Hawaii, and we want it protected. But there's a whole other field of agriculture that I represent out in Waianae.
Food for consumption locally.
Yes. This has nothing to do, in other words, the efficiencies that are typically addressed, say buying a large machine like a Caterpillar, okay? That helps efficiencies, that lower costs, but that means you axe people's jobs, and that's the exact opposite of what we want. We have a lot of unemployment in Waianae. We want to give people opportunities for employment. We don't want the Caterpillar tractors in our backyard. We want 50 people to be on the field, pulling taro out of the ground or planting it, yeah? And instead of having massive margins of profitability so we can sell it to Gerber, you know, and make all these massive amounts of money, no, we would be just happy if the people, the hundreds of people who worked on our farms could take home the taro, yeah, and feed their own families.
But that sounds more like a community farm or community garden situation as opposed to what, you know, we've been hearing from Chris Manfredi and from Simon Russell, that they're talking about very... not very big margins here to be able to grow their farms. Anything else you want to say about this? Because we've got some callers on the line. I want to get them through because they want to talk to you. Okay, going to Mike, calling us from Haiku. Aloha, Mike. Thanks for your patience.
Yeah, hi. Glad to be with you guys. First of all, I just wanted to say we should create a position for Vince as farmer commissioner. in terms of getting the first step, I think somehow we have to get across to everybody that comes here that they have to grow something that they eat, even if it's a basil plant, whatever it is, to grow something. And when you start to taste the fresh stuff that you've grown, you start to appreciate the fact that you better start going to the farmers markets because they have the same stuff here. And
but Mike, isn't that kind of difficult to sort of, you know, legislate to somebody that you've got to grow something or, you know, you or buy here, even if it may be better and your heart may be in the right place with it? That's awfully hard to tell somebody who might have, you know, the most pink, purple and red of thumbs that they should be growing something.
Well, I mean, we're talking now about feeding yourself, right? Mm. So the best way, how do we feed ourselves before we have mass agriculture? We grew our own stuff.
Mm. Well, that's true, but now you've got a lot of people who are living in condos, and we've got a lot more condos
in a window box,
coming online.
Whatever it is, I mean, just to grow something, to get into, maybe it's through education, I don't know. I know at the private schools, they have their own gardens. Somehow, if the legislation could pass that every school was mandatory, had to have a garden. It's just getting people used to the idea and getting off their asses and not being so lazy and actually growing something. It can be as small as in a container, whatever.
That's a really good point.
And that will get them on the track. Then they will want to go to the farmers markets because that's where that same stuff is growing.
But you and I both know that there are going to be people who are going to say, I don't want anything to do with that. So, I mean, I appreciate the spirit of what you're saying. I'm just wondering how you get somebody to do something like that when they have no intention. They'd rather pay whatever it is to be able to buy it, likely, you know, from a supermarket as well as maybe a farmer's market. Chris, jump in here.
Yeah. As I said earlier, society has evolved to where 2% are growing the food for the other 98%. That's allowed people to be doctors, teachers, first responders, talk show hosts.
Wait a minute. I grow stuff at my house.
Oh.
I know you do.
Good girl.
I know you do. But the caller makes a good point. You know, getting your hands in the soil, turning off all the noise and all the video screens and cell phones. Mm. You know, there's a lot of value in that. And in a lot of ways, it's self-education and understanding where your food comes from. And, I mean, if you ask 10 people where their food comes from, I would bet 8 of them are going to say the supermarket.
Well, yes, little kids, and that's the first thing they say.
That's a survey.
Let's ask some of our callers what they have to say while we still have some time to ask them. We have Nikhilananda calling us from Maui. Aloha. Welcome to Town Square, and thank you for your patience.
Hi, Beth Ann. Great conversation. A couple of quick comments and then questions that the panelists can take at their own leisure. First of all, pushing farmers markets when you said, Beth Ann, earlier a couple of moments ago about how keeping the costs down and encouraging, really pushing and encourage both county and state farmers markets. Maui County has one person in the Department of Agriculture, one person for the whole county, yet the mayor has probably 20 executive assistants. There's an organization called Grow Some Good, which is getting gardens on the public schools, the elementary schools, teaching people from day one what it's like that your food doesn't come from Safeway or McDonald's, but it's grown, and now they're dealing with state regulations about the kids actually taking the food and turning it, what they're growing and turning into food that they can eat. Mm-hmm. I would like the panelists at their own, how they can answer a couple of different questions. Talk about invasive species, the differences between the Farm Bureau, differences and similarities between the Farm Bureau and the Hawaii Farmers Union United, the continual loss of A1 prime ag lands, ag subdivisions, gentlemen estates, and gated communities.
Well, we talked a little bit about that last one, and I know you've got three questions there, but we'll take the first two and see if we can
get the other ones, and you can take the ones that you want. Zoning changes that would allow intentional farming communities. You know, Simon talked about that. If you can only have one house and one additional farming, you know, but where you want to have a couple of workers on your land so you can have you know, change the kind of zoning so you allow that, and also pushing for eco-farming tourism. And the last one is that biochemical companies are compromising our lands by poisoning them.
Ooh, okay. Yes. All right. We're going to start with the first two. Okay. Who wants to jump in?
Go ahead, Chris.
Well, we spoke about invasive species a little bit earlier.
Mm-hmm. So I don't want to belabor that one, but is there any other thing else you wanted to say about invasive species? Or Simon, you want to say something about invasive species?
We agree with the invasive species issue with Farm Bureau, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we need to curb them at our airports and stop the movement of them between islands. And maybe the method of containing them between Farm Bureau and Farmers Union may differ. I mean, we would like more biodiversity instead of some of the monocropping that's happening that may be leading to some of the invasive species spreading. And there might be biological ways. And actually, the coffee berry borer is being remediated with a biological method.
Natural farming fungus. Uh-huh.
And so that's a very important thing. As a producer, I'm dealing with bugs all the time. And I use crop diversity to address that issue and soil health. When plants are making complete protein, the bugs aren't really, they can't digest them. So,
okay, very quickly, because he also asked, what's the difference between your organization and the Farm Bureau? Chris?
I would say that the Farm Bureau and the Farmers Union has more that they agree upon than things that they don't.
Farm Bureau is a refrain that we're hearing a lot tonight.
Yeah, well, the cornerstone of Farm Bureau's policy, and that's not just in Hawaii but nationwide, and as you said in the intro, we have nearly 6 million members nationwide and 2,000 more or less families here in Hawaii. And we support virtually everything that the Farmers Union supports, but we support all of agriculture. We think it's all important. We think there's a place for all of it. Hawaii has an important role in the global food system. And the issues that we're talking about here locally play themselves out on a global scale. Issues with a reduction in the farmer workforce, a finite amount of land, finite amount of water, reducing water, climate change.
So with all that,
weeds, pests, disease.
Is there anything that we can give him an answer that says, okay, there's a real difference between? Is there something that you say that's really where you put?
Well, as I said, we support all forms of agriculture.
Okay.
So if there's divisions, I would
okay.
leave that.
Okay, Simon,
to,
you want to jump in just for a quick second here because I want to take one more caller.
We advocate for the sovereign right of family farmers to create sustained, vibrant, and prosperous agriculture communities for the benefit of all Hawaii through cooperation, education, legislation. We're primarily focused on soil health initiatives and family farming, and we generally don't speak for agribusiness corporations, although we don't pass judgment on anybody who uses Roundup or other types of chemicals that most of our members choose not to use. But,
okay, can we leave it there for the moment? Because I want to see what RB from Honolulu has to say to all of you before we have to say goodbye to all of you. Thanks very much. RB, go ahead. Welcome to Town
we'll
Square.
Make it best. First, thank you to the local farmers. On the mainland, apparently, and I'm not an authority on the issue, but judges are supporting chemical companies, that if pollen from one field goes into another field, the farmer of that other field may lose their crop and seeds because genetically that's become a different product and ownership. And Monsanto, for example, has also created a doomsday machine or a seed, as it may be called. So I'm curious what you farmers think about all that.
It's called Terminator technology, by the way.
Right.
And Bethan, I guess because I learned of both the Farm Bureau before the Farmers Union was even created and understand the differences just really basically. What we're not talking about in this entire conversation is that the Department of Agriculture, or that agriculture in general, is directly tied to nutrition. See, when we talk about it as an industry, we talk about the money being made. We don't talk about the most nutritious types of crops that can be raised on the soil, yeah? And if that is going to be the most important thing, yeah, then the healing that can come from this food and all of those things that come with that will answer our caller's questions about the types of poisons that we're putting into the soil or into our water supply or into the air being sprayed, as the first caller talked about, the chemtrails and so forth. As a farmer, I am much more, I mean, particularly in Hawaii, to aloha aina, yeah, or to be pono with what we're doing, we have to take those things into consideration. The ultimate goal isn't to make money in that respect. It is to produce the most healthy food so that the people who are consuming it can be healthy.
Okay, so that's your perspective. Simon, do you agree with that or with anything that you would add?
I completely agree with Ken. The ultimate goal of farming, from my perspective as a farmer, is to help people be healthy, be aloha aina and pono with what we grow in our practices. And thank you so much for the opportunity to speak your program.
Well, just stay with us for a second. Chris?
I wouldn't refute anything that Ken just said.
Is there anything more that you think that is an important thing that we should put into that conversation? I mean, they're saying
support
nutrition.
Your local farmer.
Well, and we say that a lot too. But on that line of supporting your local farmer and looking at with what's coming through the ledge, very quickly, I want to go right around the table because we're short of time. But if you had to say that there would be one thing that made it through this time that would make this session a win for you, what would that be, Simon?
The Affordable Farm Land Trust and industrial hemp.
Okay, that would be a win for you. Ken, what's
SB
a win for you?
SB 774, the Tara Lands classification, so that we can get back on and farm it as Tara Lands.
And Chris?
Ag workforce development. We need to grow the next generation of farmers and ranchers. And
Amen.
Buy local. Buy local.
And one last measure, aside from buying local, if there is something else that you think that we don't really understand, very quickly that you could tell us about what you all know that we should know, what would that be?
I think everybody needs to take a step back, take a deep breath, and understand the challenges that farmers and ranchers face. A lot of folks, and we've heard it come through in some of the comments made here on the show, a lot of folks that go into farming, they go into it because they love it. They don't go into it to make money. They need to make money as a necessity, but that's generally secondary. So understand what farmers and ranchers go through and the risks that they endure to bring a crop to market so that people can enjoy it.
All right. Ken, something that you think that we don't know that we should know very quickly?
That our Department of Agriculture is not necessarily in support of the small farmer, period. There are no experts. My bosses and the Department of Ag that oversee us have no farming experience whatsoever. They make it very difficult for us to actually produce anything food-wise for our community.
And Simon, since you are the farthest away from us at the moment, we'll give you the last word. What is it you think that we really don't understand well that we should better understand about what happens with all of you farmers?
Farming is a lifestyle, pure and simple. And to live off the farm, we need to live on the farm. And anything that people can do to make that easier, including supporting your local farm at the farmers markets and buying local, is a really good thing. So support your local farmers, everybody.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
And thank you. Thank you, Simon Russell, for being here, and to Ken Koike, and to Chris Manfredi, and to all of you for joining us tonight for Town Square. We'll be back with you next week, and I'll see you tomorrow morning right here at 8 o'clock for The Conversation. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Aloha.